I'll hit record.
This meeting is being recorded.
I'm going to go ahead and call the 22nd of February meeting of the Marysville Planning Commission to order at this time. Noting the excused absences of Commissioner Andes and Commissioner Thetford. Also noting appears to be the presence of Commissioners Whitaker, Michael, Kappas, and Hohen. Also have the director, Haley Miller with us. And then we have a special visitor this evening. We haven't seen her beaming face here for quite some time. Want to welcome Angela. I haven't seen you around for I don't know how long.
Thank you, Steve. That's nice of you.
At any rate, our first order of business is the approval of the minutes for the January 25th meeting. I'll ask commissioners if you've had an opportunity to study and review those notes, and if so, do you have any comments or corrections?
No comments here or corrections.
In that case, do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I'll move that we approve the Planning Commission minutes of December 14th, 2021.
Is there a second?
Second.
There's been a motion and a second to approve. I can see everybody, so I'm going to ask for a show of hands.
Oh, Chair Leifert, I think I may have made a mistake. I think it was supposed to be for the January 25th, 2022 meeting.
Yeah.
I accidentally said December 14th.
Oh.
So I'll move that we approve the Planning Commission meeting minutes of January 25th, 2022.
And I assume we have
still
a second.
Second.
So all affirming that motion, please raise your hand. Looks like it's unanimous. The minutes are approved in their current form. As I always do, I'll ask if there's anyone out there online that would like to address the commission on any item that isn't on our agenda this evening. My screen doesn't seem to show any outsiders from my vantage point. Do you see anybody, Haley?
No.
Let the record show then that there are no persons wanting to discuss anything other than what's on the agenda this evening. So we've got the public hearing coming up here then regarding Mylar copies. And Haley, I'll give you the floor regarding that before we open a hearing.
Thank you, Chair Leifer. Good evening, Planning Commission. Tonight we have scheduled a public hearing for a pretty straightforward code change related to Mylar copies. This is a more durable type material that was previously required by cities and the county for documents that were being prepared for recording at the Snohomish County Auditor. And this material is no longer required. So the city is proposing to remove this requirement from code. It's a pretty spendy piece of material, and it's hard to come by. I think Commissioner Kappas noted that at the last meeting. So applicants will be happy to hear this, and the city will be requiring now one paper copy at least to physically sign, and then the paper copy will go to the county for recording. After the document is recorded, we're going to ask the applicant to provide us with an electronic version of the signed document to keep on file, and we'll be eliminating that step and then eliminating storage on the city's end. And I just wanted to note too that the city has gone paper free with application intake, which is pretty cool. And this is just one of the steps we've been meaning to get to. So happy to answer any questions.
You know, does this mean all the old Mylars will be destroyed, or what's going to be the state of those?
There's a record retention value, I think, placed on different hard copies. So if we took it in as a hard copy, we're required to maintain it as a hard copy. We can most likely archive those sooner than later if they're scanned in on the computer, but we do need to retain those on file, but we might have an intern at some point if they haven't already scanned those in for us so that we can view those easily on the computer. And I believe we have most of them scanned in.
Thanks. Any other questions? We need to have public hearing here to take any testimony from the general public. So at this time, I'm going to open up the public part of this hearing at this time and ask if there's anybody who would like to make comment to the commission regarding this issue. Again, I don't see anybody out there in the hinterlands. One last call, and if not, I'll entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of the meeting this evening.
I'll move that we close. Are you looking for
unless there's something that somebody wants to put on the public hearing record before we close, if that is the case, then we can leave it open briefly. But if not, we're not seeing anybody out there, so then it's appropriate to have a motion to close the public testimony portion here of the hearing.
Okay, I move to close the public portion of the hearing on the Mylar copy issue.
I'll second.
Been a second by Sunshine. I'll call for a show of hands for a vote to affirm. Yep, everybody's for closing that portion of the meeting tonight. So with that, we need to work towards a recommendation. Is there anything else that you want to ask of Haley or staff, anything else to say? I would entertain a motion recommending approval what is the exact wording here? Recommendation approval for changes to the city council regarding the sunsetting of the use of Mylars. Anyway, we need a motion to accomplish that.
I'll move that the Planning Commission approve and recommend to the City Council for adoption the remove requirements to provide Mylar copies of plans.
Do we have a second of that?
I'll second it. Ms. Roger.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Can I have a show of hands for those that approve of the motion? Okay, looks like it passed unanimously. So let's move on to the next order of business, which is what we've been waiting for. Presentation by Angela. Welcome, and Angela, you've got the floor.
And she does not have the floor quite yet. Sorry, you're stuck with me for the first few minutes of it, and then I'll turn it over to the star of the show here. So can you guys see the PowerPoint, the full screen mode, not the the other one where it's small? You guys can see a full screen. Okay, cool. So Angela and I, this one, I hear an echo. Well, first I just wanted to let everyone know, if I haven't already, that Angela has been switched over to senior long range planning position. So you will get to see Angela much more during these meetings, maybe a little bit of Chris and me at most of these meetings. So congratulations to Angela on that. I know the development community is super bummed to have her switch over to this, but I think it's going to work out just great, and you know, happy to have her at more of these meetings. So tonight we wanted to give you an overview of the comprehensive plan update, and some of you have been through this before, some of you have not, so we thought it'd be good to kind of check in with the group and let you know what's in the pipeline and what we're working on. And there's a lot of different things we need to change, and we plan to kind of bring these updates through to the Planning Commission over the next year or two until this is due in 2024. And feel free to stop if you have questions, or we can save them till the end. But if we're on a slide and you have a question, I'll try and pause in between. If you want to bring that up, feel free to jump in. I'm hoping this can be an informal type presentation. So just jump in. And if I don't see you raising your hand because I can't see everybody all at once, then just jump in and say, I have a question, and we will work to answer it for you. So this diagram here on the right hand of the screen shows kind of the hierarchy of the different levels of planning. So we have the Growth Management Act, which is implemented at the state level and was implemented back in the 1990s. And then the Vision 2050 plan is a regional plan that covers King County, Snohomish County, Kitsap County, and Pierce County. So this is just another layer that's more focused on this region, and it looks at you know, the transportation standards, housing, and looks at this area on a holistic level with those counties included. And the vision plan is updated every 10 years. The last plan was Vision 240. This time around is Vision 2050, and this is what the cities and counties in this area look to when updating their plans. So moving down the line, countywide planning policies. So for Marysville, of course, it would be Snohomish County, and Snohomish County is working on updating their comprehensive plan now, and currently their website's up to date and shows the progress of the update. And the city of Marysville will be updating its local comprehensive plan, and the policies shaped by all of these different levels of management plans will be folded into the Marysville comprehensive plan. So this is a pyramid showing the different actions and vision and how the plan ties together. And it really does stem from what our vision is for Marysville, and the Planning Commission will play a very important role in helping shape this vision. Staff will be bringing you different components of the plan to update and bring it to you to consider, and hopefully we'll have some good community participation to create that vision. And the comprehensive plan that is adopted really does guide the codes that us planners use on a day-to-day level with the applicants. So we have the municipal code that guides how we review applications, and that really stems from the city's comprehensive plan. And the dates here shown on the left-hand side is when we update the plan. It happens every 9 or 10 years, so not very often, and there's quite a bit of work that goes into it. And it's meant to be a long-range plan for the city looking ahead into the future. There are various comprehensive plan elements. On the left-hand side, there's a list of the mandatory changes that the state requires, mandatory elements, I'm sorry. And on the right-hand side are the optional elements. And I believe that the city has the recreation element, sub-area plans. I'm not sure about conservation and solar energy. I don't believe we have that in there, but we do have the other two. And that's something we'll be looking at as part of this update. This is a rough timeline that Angela had put together for the update, just so you kind of know what you're in for here in the next 2 years with the group. So we'll do some initial scoping. We do not believe we need a full environmental impact study, which is an extensive amount of review into different impact elements, environmental elements. We believe we can do an addendum to the last SEPA that was created. We'll have a few months worth of visioning with the community and then some surveys throughout the time. And then we'll be briefing the Planning Commission, you know, basically starting this year through the end of next year. And then we're planning to adopt the comprehensive plan ahead of the county, just so we can say that we beat them, but also to say that, you know, we've got our plans in place prior to the county adopting its comprehensive plan. So the comprehensive plan is great and it has a lot of useful information in it, but we are hoping to kind of modernize the text and the visual elements within the plan. We are planning to add hyperlinks and include different graphics in there and basically make it more user-friendly so that when you're clicking in different sections, you can get to different areas quickly and hopefully more updated with icons and making it easier to review on the web instead of the historic format, which we had, which was printing out the paper or providing a PDF for the public to view online. So we do want to make it more aesthetically pleasing and go through the different elements and make it more user-friendly. A public participation plan is required. We are hoping that we get some better attendance at the Planning Commission meetings for this comprehensive plan update. It's just kind of a tough update to get the general public to participate in person. And we're hoping that we can do surveys online using a software called Pinpoint, which is like an online visioning board that shows different maps. And Angela, I think you might do a little better job of explaining what Pinpoint is. Would you mind jumping in and helping me out?
Yeah, sure. No problem. So we use the Social Pinpoint app with our downtown master plan update. And basically it allows you to look at certain areas in town and people can put different like feedback based on their experiences. You can link surveys to the map so you can get feedback about different ideas that you have for like redevelopment or zoning changes. So it allows everyone to be on the same page because the feedback they're providing ties in with the real world location. And then we're going to learn tomorrow about idea walls, which is another feature that Social Pinpoint offers. And I don't entirely know what it's about, but it sounds like a pretty cool way for people to just give really, you know, widespread feedback and a better way to engage with the community, since a lot of stuff is still probably going to be online for a while. We want to make sure that we're getting as much public feedback as possible. So we'll bring back whatever sorts of information we get from the Social Pinpoint, mapping, and share with you what the community is telling us through those applications.
Thank you, Angela, for the help there. And so we will also have the website up to date too, with meeting times, or at least a link to the Planning Commission page, and then the latest documents available for viewing and keep that up to date. And we are going to try and mimic what the county is doing. I think their website's laid out pretty well, and we're working on some materials right now to keep the public informed of the different steps as we work through this process. The land use element, so the next few slides, I'm going to cover just an intro on the land use element and then talk about growth targets. And then the next slides after that, I'll turn over to Angela to talk about the different elements and how they work, basically. So the land use element, and every element is important in the plan, and they all tie together and are layered on top of each other. The land use element is very important because this sets the stage of where we see commercial, where we see residential, industrial. So this really lays out the different uses in Marysville and where uses are located next to each other. And then that really drives where the road projects are going. Existing conditions play into that, of course, for utility upgrades, but this shows where our planned utilities will go, or roads, the housing. So it all interacts, but the land use element is the starting point, in my opinion, of where things are going. And this defines commercial residential uses and sets the stage. And so if we do get an application for a residential use in the Cascade Industrial Center area, we say no, because we have a vision for that area that has been played out over the last 30 years. So this is instrumental and very important to set the stage for where we want to see different things happen in Marysville. Otherwise, it's a free-for-all and not organized. So this is a very important element for the comprehensive plan. And we're not really expecting huge changes to the sub areas. We do want to maybe adjust some densities to address the state laws. And we may be modifying a couple areas, but you know, for now, Marysville will maintain most of its residential uses in central Marysville. The Cascade Industrial Center will stay intact, and we'll still have a mix of uses in the Lakewood area and primarily residential on the Whiskey Ridge, with exception to the commercial area of Whiskey Ridge and the south east portion of that area. So no major changes, but we do need to look at our growth targets more closely, which are on the next slide. So
can I interrupt you just for a second?
Please,
I got a quick question. Is that future land use map available on a Marysville website?
Yes. I will send everybody a link to this map. There's a live map on our GIS that shows the layers that you can turn on and off. So you can turn on the comprehensive plan layer that will show this on the screen, and you can turn on the zoning layer and all sorts of other layers. Or if you just want like a straight PDF, I can email it to you, or I can send you a link to the comprehensive plan. But we may have done a few comp plan amendments since the adoption of it in 2015. So what are you specifically looking for?
I'd like to be able to get on the computer here and click on that comprehensive plan map, and maybe even be able to compare it with our current map. So if there's just a whatever, you got to get on there or on the web to do that.
Yep, I'll send you some information tomorrow. I'll send it to the group. I'll probably send you too much, but I'm sure in there somewhere you'll find what you need.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, no problem. And when we bring these updates, or we'll have it broken down, we're not going to bring you a 5,000 page document and say, you know, see you in 4 days. We'll divide it out in chunks and bring it to you in pieces. So it'll be easier to kind of wade through. So we have some growth targets that were handed. Oh, Angela, are you trying to talk? Or am I just hearing an echo? I think I'm hearing an echo. I'm sorry. The city recently went through the buildable lands process with the county and our other neighboring cities. And basically that process looks at the projected numbers that our last comprehensive plan update estimated that we would be meeting as far as jobs and population growth. And the study looks at all of the land in Marysville and determines what is built on each lot and what could be built on each lot. And the difference basically comes out with a number that shows what our capacity is. So the study looks at Marysville and determines, you know, here's the remaining capacity you have left in the boundaries for population and jobs. And the capacity analysis, if you could, I don't know if you can see my mouse, but on the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth column to the right, the 2021 buildable lands report capacity as determined through 2035 shows that our population capacity for existing city boundaries and our existing zoning could yield 91,084 people. And the employment capacity is 31,434. And we have some targets that were assigned to us. And these targets are based on, you know, Vision 2050 for the area and have to do with a number of factors, our existing population, our proximity to industrial center, our proximity to different types of transit systems, and our location in this general area. And the targets that were assigned to Marysville for the year 2044 is just under 100,000 people. So 99,822 is our population target. And then the employment target is 31,902. And on the far right-hand side of this table, these are the numbers that are really going to matter for this update, are the deficits, the theoretical deficits that we have here for population. So Marysville is required in this comprehensive plan update through 2044 to plan for an additional 6,800 people, approximately, and an additional 1,000 jobs. And these numbers aren't relatively high. Just to put it in perspective, staff isn't too concerned about these numbers. We think that Marysville has plenty of room to either upzone in certain areas or put jobs in certain areas. So this is where we, as a group and on a staff level and planning commission level, get to decide where these numbers go. So at this point, I was just hoping that we could have a quick conversation before we turn it over to Angela, just to kind of discuss with the group, where are you thinking those numbers should go? So, and there's no wrong answer here. We will bring you a proposal and we have some ideas of where those additional densities can go. But if you had anywhere to put 1,000 extra jobs and 6,800 extra people in Marysville, where would you want it to go and why? And like I said, no wrong answer, but if there's any certain areas you're thinking about, you know, some ideas could be along State, north of downtown area, where we will have the high capacity transit coming through. The additional jobs could go, you know, in the Cascade Industrial Center. We could upzone a few areas, multifamily areas, to accommodate that growth. The downtown area is accounted for in those figures. So the recent update that we did for additional densities is factored into that. So we need an extra 6,800 people. So open for ideas. We can expand the boundaries too. That's a longer, more complicated process, but just kind of hoping for initial ideas at this point.
This is Roger. One question, is this something that annexation would be a consideration?
That's a good question. Potentially, I believe that before you can do an annexation, you need to demonstrate that, and Angela can jump into if I'm butchering this, but if we can demonstrate that we can't fit those numbers within the city limits, I think the county is really, and the state is really, looking for us to do infill first and foremost and reasonably require that. And if it's just not reasonable, then we would look at expanding the boundaries or annexing in additional areas. But if we have looked at every area, turned every stone, and it just looks like it's not feasible to fit that amount, we can certainly look at doing that. I think Marysville does have a lot of room for additional growth. What, you know, it's, some people don't want that, but from what I understand, you know, the fact that we don't want additional densities in the city limits may not be the best answer for that additional growth.
Typically, before we have to or are allowed to expand our urban growth boundaries, we have to hit like our 20-year, like there's a 20-year growth figure for both employment and population, and we have to hit the midway point before they'll typically entertain the expansion of the UGA. And then Haley touched on the reasonable measures, which is looking at different things that you can do, like upzoning or changing zones that would potentially allow us to accommodate the growth within the current boundaries. So, as she noted.
Angela, am I correct in our midway point is through 2035, where we'd be at 91,000 population? Is that what you meant by that? Or
like if we were wanting to expand our urban growth boundaries today, so you'd start with the original comprehensive plan, you'd look 20 years out, and you'd have to typically meet the halfway benchmark of the difference between 2035 capacity and our 2015 baseline population. So basically, whatever the difference is between those numbers, divide that in half, and typically you have to hit the halfway mark in your capacity before you can expand out.
Okay. So it's not completely off the table, Commissioner Hohen. It's an option, but we'd have to be, you know, filling out some of the different areas before we could turn to that. But it is an option, and there's no wrong answer at this point. We're just wanting to take notes. And if you'd like suggestions that we have, I'm happy to cover those too, if that would help.
How far are we from the midpoint at this time?
Let's see here. I think we're a ways off. I actually don't know the exact figure at this point. So we're at 70,000 right now population, and the capacity through 2035 is 91,000. So I think what Angela said was you'd need to be in the middle of that, right? The difference between the two. So it looks like we're, I've told myself not to do math in public for this reason.
And we can always bring that back to you too, just like so we give you a more precise idea. But like sounds like what Kayla's saying, we're a bit shy of the midpoint at this point. But we'll be looking at that a bit more closely so we can give you, you know, the full picture.
Yeah, the way you just said that, 70K wouldn't be the benchmark for the starting point, would it? Wouldn't it be back closer to the 2015 number? And then take the midpoint between that and the 91.
That's my understanding. If we were to want to expand today, you'd be taking the starting population for 2015 comp plan. You'd look out, you know, through the planned horizon to 2035, and you'd subtract the 2035 population capacity or the 2015 population from the 2035 population capacity, whatever the difference is, you divide that by two, that would be the midpoint. So for our, you know, future comp plan update, there's a bigger, you know, growth figure that we're needing to accommodate. So we'll need to look and see if we've, you know, met that, you know, benchmark. But I think we are a bit shy of being over the hurdle for probably an urban growth boundary expansion, but we'll, as you noted, be looking at that a bit more closely soon.
Looks like it's coming fast, though. Unless something changes, we're moving towards the midpoint pretty rapidly. You know, with kind of a little bit of a response to Haley's question, you know, the whether we like, or I guess a better way to put it is what we might prefer, or our preferences for where to put things and that sort of thing, kind of has to be prefaced with what the regional council, through their crystal ball and great wisdom, think that we should be allocated to in terms of what we should accommodate for population. And then as it's passed down to the county and we get that number, isn't that kind of where our target comes from? It isn't generated by what we would like.
Yes. And if it was probably up to Marysville City Council and probably the decision makers, then the number we would give ourselves would probably be zero growth. I mean, I don't know if it would be exactly zero, but I know that, you know, those target, we're growing so rapidly that I don't know if, you know, the residents or the public would mind too much if we slowed down a bit. But you're right, Chair Leifer, these are numbers that are decided on a regional level and in somewhat assigned to jurisdictions. We did have participation in the process, but really, if we saw fatal flaws and the methods used early on is where we could have participated. But this methodology was agreed upon by all the cities, including Marysville, and these are the numbers that are assigned to us. So now that we have the numbers, we're just looking where to accommodate these. And the gold line, SWIFT gold line, is coming here in the next 7 or 8 years through Marysville along state. And it's my understanding that cities are required to densify around these high capacity transit corridors. So we think it would be logical to place some higher density residential units along State Avenue north of the downtown area. So maybe not right on State, maybe behind the commercial uses or a mix of uses where you have commercial on the bottom, residential on top, and kind of make that a more dense corridor. Some other options could be to slightly upzone some of our existing multifamily areas and maybe establish a minimum density so that we can get more density in those multifamily zones. Another option is to bump up each of the single family zones from their designation and basically take the lowest density zone, make it a little more dense, and then kind of go down the line. So we think that there's some creative ways to address this where, we won't see the impacts all in one area. It can be spread out. So those were some of the ideas that we were coming up with. And I believe that we are required to put populations near the high capacity transit corridor anyway. So that to me seems like a no-brainer. We have these numbers, we have to address them, we have to put population there anyway. So I think that's going to be a good place to start. And we intend to bring that forward for a good, healthy discussion with more specific areas. So this is just meant to be kind of a broad introduction, and then we'll have maps and alternative options for you to go through. And then employment capacity, I think that's a small number too. So that's that part. If you guys have any other suggestions or anything that I just listed off that, sounds terrifying or something that you're not you're wanting more information on, let us know and we'll come back with some more details.
Haley, I'm just curious, with the current construction and applications in process, do you have a ballpark number on what that looks like with regards to population addition since the 2020 census?
I think we could look into that further. I know in the Whiskey Ridge area right now, we have at least 1,100 houses in either in preliminary approval, under construction, or finalizing soon. And I believe it's maybe three or just under three per house that's projected for population. Lakewood area, we have hundreds of units. I want to say even 1,000 up in that area too. But I thought, and Angela might want to chime in here, that was accounted for in the buildable lands analysis, the existing developments that we were looking at. Sorry to keep throwing it back to you.
That's okay. So I believe the cutoff was like April of 2019 for the buildable lands analysis. I'll probably need to double check, but they pick a cutoff point and they count all, everything that's kind of pipeline up to that point in terms of like factoring that into capacity, and then future stuff typically doesn't get counted, except that there's some discretion that the cities have if there's something they think is going to be built within the time frame, that they can potentially have that credited towards what's happening to have the, it reflected in a decrease in capacity. So, but I believe it's the April 2019, and we can confirm that date for you.
Haley, before we move on to the thing, I want to make a quick response to what you had to say earlier. And it is that I agree with all the high points that you made there. Specifically, I think it's real clear that it's a no-brainer to bring a higher population to the urban arterials, the main urban arterial highways, and where we have the most efficient transportation established. That's very clear. But then to spring off of one other thing that you mentioned, and that was that the if the city had its way, we would probably accept zero growth or maybe close to it. Well, and that's probably true. And to just kind of speak on behalf of what probably is the majority of opinion of the citizens, since we can't lock in or reduce what we're allocated, one of the other obvious ways to at least try to speak to the idea that people would prefer not to be so densely packed in would, of course, be expansion of the urban growth boundary. So if we don't do that, then we're probably going to get a lot more dense. We can do it. We can go higher. We can make things smaller. We can go to 400 square foot units for people to stay in. You know, that's getting popular in some places. There's all kinds of stuff like that we can do. But as we continue to increase that close in density, you begin to make people less happy. So anyway, I think that just needs to be commented to, that there is a pressure to expand the boundaries for other reasons than just protection of, you know, the environment. I mean, not that you can't do it without doing that, but, you know, the preservation of farmland and all that, at some point, there's probably going to have to be a trade-off with the needs of society. Anyway, that's my comment.
And also to touch on Haley's comments earlier, in terms of type of development, I was going to mention some of the redevelopment along, I think it's 100th Street, west of Cascade, going towards Fred Meyer. Some of those projects that have removed formerly kind of downtrodden properties and have put in multifamily, I think is a benefit. And I think it's a good use of those properties, can get populations kind of within the urban center. And I think that type of those types of projects, I think is good for the city moving forward.
That's a great idea. Thank you.
It seems to me that all the way from Seattle to north of us, the transit improvements are creating a significant amount of of dense apartments and housing, and I don't know if it's condominiums and so on. And with the Marysville projection of the increased rapid transit through State Avenue, it seems to me that in the downtown area would be fairly ripe for some significant housing to take advantage of the transit and the great location that Marysville can be for a lot of different directions.
Yep, that's a good point. Okay, so I think we'll move on from that, and this topic alone could take up a whole meeting or two or three or five. So we will bring back some options and really dig deep into this with the Planning Commission and bring you some information related to this. So we just kind of wanted to let you know what the figures were and where we're headed and kind of what's to come there. So I will pass it over to Angela at this point. Let me see if I can share my screen. I know that everyone has been anxiously awaiting. Let's see here. That one should be the right one. Okay. Angela, I'm going to turn it over to you for the next few slides.
Thank you, Haley. So as part of our land use element update, we need to review any state statutes that have been amended since the last update, and also Puget Sound Regional Council's Vision 2050 requirement. They brought a huge list of different items that the local comprehensive plans need to align with. So we'll review, as Haley noted, our 2044 population employment targets and consider different alternatives for accommodating that growth within the city boundaries which we first have to go through reasonable measures and demonstrate an inability to accommodate that growth within the boundaries before considering a potential urban growth boundary expansion. So we'll conduct that reasonable measures analysis, and we'll come back to you with different potential options for accommodating both the employment and the residential growth that we're anticipating. And then there's a lot of updating of different maps, charts, figures, text, and policies that we will be bringing back as well. Next slide, please. So few slides are areas that are going to have greater focus or emphasis with the 2024 comprehensive plan update. As we've been discussing, Marysville is a high capacity transit community, which is an area where they either have bus rapid transit or the light rail. And there's a regional goal of Vision 2050 of attracting 65% of the region's population growth and 75% of the region's job growth into regional centers and near high capacity transit. So we're going to look closer at whether, you know, the city specifically needs to like attain that goal. It felt more like it was a goal of, our regional area, but still there is that push to have people adjacent to transit so that there reduces reliance on single occupant vehicle trips and whatnot. So as Haley mentioned, Community Transit Swift Gold Line is planned to arrive within the city in 2027, and there's a desire to have more employment and residential capacity along those nodes for the bus rapid transit to basically leverage the advantages that bus rapid transit provides. Next slide, please.
Angela, before you rush sure. by that, on those our Swift bus modes nodes, how big of a radius from that point are we trying to encompass to turn into a much higher density?
Potentially like a quarter to a half mile radius is kind of the typical area that's looked at to potentially densify. It could be greater, but usually they do look at the quarter to half mile radius.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. So some other areas that are a focus of Vision 2050, one is social equity. This is probably an area that is of greater, import in areas like Seattle, where historically, you know, communities have been divided by, you know, freeway systems and investments have been differential in different parts of the community. But this is an important regional goal that every local jurisdiction needs to address. So the social equity piece it seeks to provide everyone with access to the resources and opportunities they need to improve their quality of life and address current and past inequities, particularly among communities of color, people of low income, and in historically underserved communities. Housing initiatives, there's going to be a greater emphasis on a wider variety of housing options, not just single family residential, but also duplexes, triplexes, walk-ups. So the missing middle piece that you guys were introduced to more with the downtown master plan update and looking at different options so that people can afford their housing. And but also that housing is more adjacent to transit services and jobs to kind of reduce, you know, the single occupant vehicle trips and make it so that people are able to go and recreate and go to services that are adjacent to their homes. And then another piece that is mandated by Vision 2050 are climate change and environmental protection standards. So the state has actually enacted a pretty lofty goal of greenhouse gas emissions in the state being 80% below 1990 levels, which is pretty aggressive. But things that we can do to potentially facilitate that goal would be the compact growth patterns along the regional transit, the high capacity transit corridors, encouraging other modes of transport, protecting environmental resources, which we're already, you know, doing with our existing plans, and other factors that we'll still need to explore. So these are some big new things that we're required to do. Next slide, please. So this is just a clip of the Puget Sound Regional Council's different policies and goals that the local plans need to be in compliance with. So the little pink icon that's to the left of the item are items that are new for this update that the city will need to ensure that our local comprehensive plan aligns with. Next slide, please. So for the housing element, we need to, as typical, update our demographic and housing information, including the age of the housing stock, how what the family is composed of, like, you know, how many 2, 3, 4, you know, occupant homes, age of community members, income stratification and cost burden. So how much is it costing people to afford their housing? Is it, you know, over a certain percentage of their income, then they're considered cost burden. So the Alliance for Housing Affordability is going to be assisting with housing profiles for each of their members that will be able to be incorporated into our housing element. We also need to, as I noted on the prior slide, ensure compliance to state statutes requiring more in-depth analysis for affordable and low-income housing equity and avoiding displacement. So if an area is being redeveloped, what are strategies to ensure that people that are maybe low and moderate income have an appropriate housing situation to go to? Washington Center for Real Estate Research at the University of Washington is going to be compiling different housing supply affordability metrics for cities that are over 10,000 people, and that will be a tool that will help us to meet the different new state requirements that pertain to housing. And then other sources for our update, U.S. Census Bureau, the County Assessor information, American Community Survey information will be used to incorporate into our housing element. And then again, these are the various different goals and policies that we need to ensure that our local comprehensive plan aligns with to ensure that it's consistent with Puget Sound Regional Council's Vision 2050. Next slide, please.
So this is the element. Oh, go ahead. This was your slide.
You're right. I'm sorry.
No, you're totally fine, Angela. So this is the inner environmental element of the comprehensive plan that shows where the critical areas are located throughout the city. And there's several maps that would need to be updated if we have best available information to show on these. So we'll be updating the different maps and figures in here. One of the new elements to this would involve climate change that is required to be addressed by all cities with this comprehensive plan update. And we do anticipate getting an example ordinance basically from Commerce to follow. And that is something we'd want to work through with the group when we get more information. So that's a required element that all of us need to do, and we will work through that with the group. This is a checklist that shows new requirements for the environmental element, and some of these relate to air quality, reducing trips, and we'll cover these when we get to this with everyone too. So there are some greenhouse gas related policies and climate change policies that we'll need to build in. So that would be different than our last round at the update. And let's see here. The economic development element, the city will be hiring a new economic development manager here in the next few months. It will be under the executive's office, but this position will work closely with the planning division. So you may actually have a visitor at the planning commission meetings
going over the economic development part of the update, and we'd be just looking at our existing goals. Of course, you know, maintaining the Cascade Industrial Center and basically looking at any ways to expand or invite new types of jobs and industries into the Marysville area. And, you know, I think it's important to note that these long range plans do work over time. The Cascade Industrial Center is a really great example. That's been on the books for over 30 years, and some things just take time. The market is now ready for that area. And I don't think we can count the number of times we've had people or, you know, applicants or property owners or developers approach the city wanting to do multifamily in that area, because that's what the market was ready for at the time. And we held out, and now we're seeing the vision play out into the Cascade Industrial Center, which is really cool and can provide some jobs for this community and prevent people from commuting. So, this just reminded me of this is a good example of long range plans that may seem like we'll never get there, but it does happen eventually. So I know looking 20 years ahead sometimes, can be daunting, but it is kind of exciting to see some of these long range plans play out. Anyway, we'll be dusting off this section of the plan and seeing if we need to update it and address where those additional jobs will go. This is a checklist showing the different elements that are required here, and some of this and other elements do focus on social equity and giving opportunity for, you know, all different individuals in the community and not just a certain type of individual. And I'll turn it over to you there, Angela, for this one.
Thank you, Haley. So the transportation element update, the lead on that will be taken by our Public Works Department. They'll be hiring a staffer, a consultant to basically do that. There's a lot of technical work that goes into modeling different roads that have been put in place and intersections, and looking at the additional pressure on the systems from new growth. So this is a budget request that the Public Works Division is anticipating putting before council for 2023-2024. As Andrew just noted, we're going to update to reflect any roads that have been built or are contemplated by our downtown master plan, Lakewood neighborhood sub-area plan, and in the Cascade Industrial Center. Public Works will coordinate with county staff to review roadway segments outside of Marysville city limits, in particular west and east of 156th Street, to ensure this focus to direct traffic to the new 156th Street interchange when that's constructed. So we need to closely coordinate to be sure that that's a successful project. Next slide, please. So we'll update our pedestrian and bicycle routes. There's a huge emphasis on pedestrian connectivody and multimodal transportation in both Vision 2050, and it was also a focus of the last comprehensive plan update. So we'll highlight different trails that provide a regional benefit, like the Centennial Trail Connector that was recently opened. There's going to be a new or an increased emphasis on transit, particularly the Swift Bus Rapid Transit line, and providing access to park and ride facilities. Ultimately, regionally, there's, you know, some coordination to ensure that all the connections with, you know, between bus rapid transit locations and the light rail occur in a coordinated fashion. That's more for folks that are south of the bus, but there's a piece, here that we look at as well. Next slide, please. So the consultant will be analyzing intersections to ensure that they're going to meet adequate concurrency levels that the city has established, and kind of look at if different connections or improvements need to be, you know, re-ranked in order to have them occur sooner. There's a huge amount of things on our transportation wish list, and they're put into categories of like near term, mid term, and long term. And sometimes, depending on where growth is occurring, they need to like reassess which, you know, projects get bumped up in terms of priority and need to, you know, be the focus that the city has. We'll also look at our traffic impact fee calculation, which projects go into calculating that, and then compare our rates with neighboring jurisdictions to be sure we hit the sweet spot that they're, you know, we're capturing, that development is mitigating its fair share, but that we're not, you know, having a fee so high that it deters development where it's desired. And then there will also be an evaluation of the federal classification of freight routes and other criteria to ensure that we are eligible for different state and, you know, federal grants. So you need to have all that information current to be sure that your grant package is something that, you know, will progress through the process. Next slide, please. And then again, Puget Sound Regional Council has set forth a variety of different goals and policies that need to be reflected in the update. So our consultant in Public Works primarily will be taking a look at those and ensuring that any policies within our current plan are updated to reflect and align with the regional policies. Next slide, please. And then our Parks and Recreation Plan, it was just updated fairly recently. You guys probably all saw that about a year ago. So there probably won't be a huge amount more that needs to be done in terms of the substance of the plan. But one thing that is an area of focus would be our level of service and concurrency standards to be sure that we are able to properly justify and collect the appropriate park fee based on, you know, the growth that we're experiencing and the different park improvements that are on the roster to ultimately construct. Next slide, please. The utilities element, this one, it's a bit where you're kind of going around and looking at different plans that are available on the various utility purveyors website. A lot of the information they have is fairly proprietary in nature for security reasons, but we'll update to reflect general plan updates and, you know, pinpoint if there's any like known capacity issues in certain areas. We'll reach out to PUD, PSC, Ziply, and Comcast and see if there's any information they can provide or areas that they think we need to focus on. And we'll review their planning documents that are those that are publicly available and incorporate relevant information into our plan. Next slide, please. And then the public facilities and services is defined as streets, roads, highways, sidewalks, street and road lighting, systems, traffic signals, domestic water supply, storm and sanitary sewer, parks and recreation, and schools. So public facilities is quite like a wide basket, capturing a lot of different areas. Public services, there are things like fire protection, law enforcement, public health, education, recreation, environmental protection, other governmental services. This update will primarily involve incorporating the current school capital facilities plans by reference and maybe highlighting key areas of those plans, working with our police department on their level of service standards and if there's any major, you know, policies or, you know, level of service issues that need to be noted. And again, coordinating with our fire district and then also our public works department for water and sewer capacity to be sure that any zoning changes that we have, that there's adequate capacity in the desired areas where we might consider upzoning to serve the new development. So we'll have to ensure we coordinate closely with them on that. And we'll probably streamline that section. There's a huge amount of overlap between that section and the functional plan. So we could probably streamline that a bit and largely reference the standalone functional plan rather than trying to like reiterate such a broad summary. Next slide, please. And then these are just some docket requests we have that you guys will be considering this year. The first is actually our 88th Street Master Plan area. Try as they might, the property owners haven't been successful in finding someone that would like to develop for them under the form-based code, which requires a non-residential ground floor and would allow multifamily above almost every perspective, developer of that property has wanted to do exclusively multifamily, which isn't something that the city would like to see due to the significant access constraints where it's going to require the elevated crossing, I believe it's at 81st Place, and otherwise like onto 88th Street, it's just a right in, right out sort of situation. So the property owners has requested that we revert back to the prior light industrial zoning for that area. So that's something that the city is in support of. So we'll be processing like the repeal of the 8th Street master plan likely, and then the rezone to light industrial so that they can hopefully pursue uses that are more well suited for that area. And then the other docket request, this is city initiated, but it's spurred by just a huge volume of requests we've had for light industrial type uses in some of the general commercial lands that's east of Smoky Point Boulevard and north of 152nd. So this line that you see, there's like a on that right image with that's primarily red, from the zoning map. There's a yellow line that kind of goes north-south that shows roughly where we're looking to potentially rezone from general commercial to light industrial. And we're looking at the uses in the general commercial and light industrial zones, and we'll probably be proposing an overlay on the area that's east of that line of GC, so that the zoning would be light industrial, but there'd be a GC overlay to basically open that area up to a whole host of uses that might be compatible, because the market is really signaling to us that people want to pursue light industrial uses there. So, and we're using, a lot of flexibility to accommodate and encourage that economic growth, but it probably would be a little bit more straightforward and clear if we have the zoning light industrial to support those inquiries that we're getting. That will be the second big docket item we'll be bringing forward this year for your consideration.
And Angela, I just wanted to add really quick, the area that we're planning to rezone to LI, I think we're also wanting to allow for GC uses as well. So maybe allow a transition area there where they can do either the existing zoning or LI and have the best of both worlds in that area. Because I just think in this case, it's Murphy's Law, right? When we change it to LI, someone's going to want to do something that's GC zoned. And, we think that's a good area to kind of allow those uses to blend together there east of Smoky Point Boulevard, east of the yellow line, I should say.
Hey, Angela, refresh my memory on GC along Smoky Point Boulevard there. Can they build apartments above commercial on a ground floor?
Yeah, in all of our commercial zones, pretty much you can do like residential above a street level commercial use.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
And if you're done with that slide, Angela.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, these are just two. I swear we are almost done. I'm sorry, PowerPoint Zoom fatigue is a real thing. So we've got a few slides left. You guys are doing great. We have two UGA proposals that, go ahead. Oh, did you say, sorry, there's some echo that keeps happening, so I'm gonna just ignore it. There are two UGA expansions that are being reviewed at the county level. And so this is applicant initiated. These two areas are being applied for as part of the county docket process. And it's my understanding that the city can still add UGAs to our area as part of our comprehensive plan update. As we look through these two areas have been proposed by an applicant. So first area on the left-hand side of the screen is west of 67th Avenue Northeast and just south of 132nd Street Northeast. The high school is a bit south of there, I guess, to the west. This is an area that is currently a large farm. Do you remember the name of the owner, Angela, or what that farm is called?
Van Dam.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you, Chair Lyford. So Van Dam property, for those of you that are familiar with that area, this is proposed as a residential UGA expansion. The applicant, approached us later in the process. I know that they had maybe brought it up to staff throughout the years, but in December is when the applicant had approached city staff members and council members about these comprehensive plan amendment proposals that are going through the county process, and had asked the city for a letter of support. And we just felt that we had not nearly enough time to really vet this out. So when we do the comprehensive plan update, we are looking at the whole city, the bigger picture, where the numbers are going, and then we kind of assign it to areas and decide if we're going to bump out the UGA in certain areas. So we kind of felt like for us to give a recommendation would be very premature without looking at the numbers. Initially on a technical level, I don't know if the numbers that we've been assigned, since they're so low, support an expansion to the UGA, but it's certainly something, you know, we're not in opposition for. The second area is over there east of the existing North Point development. So that purple line is the boundary between Arlington and Marysville, 531. So Smoky Point exit, if you take that and go all the way down to where the intersection of 67th is. This is just south of there. This area is actually in between Arlington and Marysville to an extent. So we've actually brought this idea forward to the city of Arlington. We have bi-monthly meetings with Arlington staff. And so this annexation, if I'm being honest, we're more excited about, because this is the Cascade Industrial Center area, and staff is supportive of this area from an economic standpoint. From a technical land use standpoint, I don't know if we are ready to justify the expansion based on the very low numbers we got from the state. So, but there is some political interest in this area, obviously, with the Cascade Industrial Center growth. So we did bring this to Arlington staff, and it did spur some conversations about the UGA boundaries between Marysville and Arlington. And we did ask Arlington to kind of start looking into that closer. And, you know, we're hoping that we can plan ahead better this time related to boundaries, so that, you know, it's not as contentious as it was over on the west side, Smoky Point area. So we've started those conversations with Arlington. So these two applications are going to the county. I believe they had a review sometime in February by the county, and I believe it's working through the process. So we'll keep you apprised of these UGAs, any other staff initiated proposals for the comprehensive plan update. But we just want to let you know that these are kind of working through their own process right now. And the city stance at this point is we're not opposed to either. We're definitely less excited about the residential UGA because, you know, we think maybe we can accommodate more residential in there, and the public isn't generally as excited about that. And the CIC area we're more excited about at this point. So we haven't done much more analysis than that, and we will definitely be following up with the group on these two areas.
Did you say you did the city just withheld comment to the county?
Yeah, we were asked to provide a letter of support, and there, you know, we felt like we didn't have enough of the big picture of this update to really support two UGA expansions that were brought forward to us in December. So, you know, I can say verbally, you know, we're more excited about the industrial area, less excited about the residential. We don't really think we have numbers to support either of them at this point, but we haven't had a close look. I think that's really the response I gave the applicant, and I just didn't really feel like there was a good, honest way to put that in writing without it sounding very vague, because that's just where we are at this point with that. So yes, to answer your question, just we're not opposed to it. We're not supporting it. Basically no comment at this point. You know, so.
I'm kind of surprised that section up there, your A10 section, that's some of the wettest land in areas there. What does the sensitive areas maps show in there?
It shows a creek that goes through the site. I don't have the exact lines on here. I have to put the critical area.
I know where the...
go ahead.
I know where the creeks are. I just want to know what the designations were as far as other classes of wetlands up in that area. I know that that's really wet, high water table stuff. Probably as you go across the valley from there, it's the wettest of anything coming across close to, 132nd or 136th.
Yeah, and I haven't seen a delineation on this property yet or the farms down south, but my guess is, yep, they're wet and there will be some wetlands that need to be taken care of. I don't know if they're high functioning, but it really depends on, a number of factors. So I don't know, but my guess is, yeah, this property's wet. It's going to have a creek on it and some wetlands. And I'm assuming they've kind of done a preliminary reconnaissance. So next time I'm on the phone with them, I'll poke around and see if I can get more information on that.
That's one of the areas a few years back, we had quite a conversation about trying to turn it into a kind of an arboretum with an interpretive area and turn it into a big super ecological site, for the creeks to run into and expanded area with ponds and so forth. But it didn't ever grow any legs, I guess.
Yeah. And, we can certainly, if it does become industrial, that could be something we look at with the applicant to see if they can provide, that kind of feature in the area that is unbuildable anyway. On the other side of the tracks for North Point Development, they did provide, I want to say, a mile and a half of a trail that's a corridor that is going to have a trail and then enhancement all around it. It'll be quite beautiful to walk through and look at. So I don't see why we wouldn't be able to maybe build something in. I'm just not sure what the layout of the land is there, but it's not an impossible achievement there to do. We could work with them if needed. So those are the two areas, and we will definitely be bringing more information. There's some resources. I believe that we attached this PowerPoint to the packet. So basically, we all have our work cut out for us for the next couple of years, especially Angela, who is now full-time long range. So she will be the brains of this operation for sure. And we'll be bringing you different topics to look at. And so that was 30,000 feet up. I hope you guys found it helpful. I know that it was a lot of information, but we just wanted to kind of set the stage for everyone, especially the newer commissioners who may not have gone through this process before. So if you have questions, reach out to us, but we do plan on bringing it in kind of chunks to the group and not all at once. So it'll be divided up. We'll have, staff analysis and be able to kind of dissect these pieces one at a time, just little bites at it for the next few years until we have the whole thing updated. And then we get a break for 10 years or 9 years till the next update. So we're happy to answer any questions at this point. Yeah, again, lots of information. So thanks for hanging in there for that.
I have a question. In the transportation area, you talked about reviewing traffic impact fees and calculations and compare with neighboring cities. And I'm just wondering if there's, I've heard whispers kind of that the Marysville fees for construction weren't as competitive as the surrounding communities. And it would seem to me if we're looking for higher density and obligations for private contractors to build low-end housing, that would be something that we're on top of.
Sure. Angela, do you want to jump in?
Sorry, guys, I got this phone situation here. So our Public Works and our consultant team will take a look at surrounding jurisdictions. There's probably a variety of different factors that go into that. Like, for example, Everett, you'd expect to probably have a lower traffic impact fee because it's largely built out and it's, you know, got robust networks and it's more of an infill situation. Marysville, we've kind of got quite a variety of different situations. We've got some greenfields, like, you know, the Lakewood area and Sunnyside, and then we've got infill areas. So they're going to, I think it's a balancing act also, and a policy decision that the city council will have to make once we take a look at how we stack up against other jurisdictions and what our needs are. And I know there's a discount that's given for commercial development because that's something, you know, we want to facilitate. And the Public Works Department and, you know, consultation with the Planning Commission and probably council will probably, you know, make a recommendation if and what changes may be necessary based on our priorities and where we align with other surrounding jurisdictions. So that's a good observation, though.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Pretty well covered things, I guess, for tonight, huh? Next meeting is March 8th if it doesn't get canceled, huh?
Yeah, I don't know exactly if we're going to hold that meeting or not. I think we'll definitely have a meeting in March. But once we get through, get going on the comprehensive plan update, we'll be probably using our two meetings a month for the next few years. And maybe in April, we can revisit the conversation about in-person meetings. The consensus I got from the group was that if we're required to wear masks, then probably Zoom is the best format. And if the masks are not required at some point, then maybe a hybrid format would be more appropriate where you could choose to come in person or still be on Zoom. And it works pretty smoothly. We're doing that for council meetings and it works a lot smoother than you would think. There's a screen for the Zoom participants and everyone can hear each other and see each other really well. So we're just monitoring the state regulations. It looks like masks mandate and it looks like maybe masks will be removed sometime in the future, but who knows, right? We gotta just wait till we see it before we make any decisions. And then after that, we can revisit the conversation. It would be nice to see all of you in person. Zoom's convenient, but we'll leave that decision to you. It's your meeting, not staff's. So we'll bridge that gap, I guess, when we get closer to the mask mandate, maybe lifting.
Well, is there any other comment or new thoughts to be brought up, or are you ready to adjourn? How about a motion to adjourn?
I'll move that we adjourn the February 22nd, 2022 commission meeting.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Meeting is adjourned then.
Thanks for hanging in there, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Thanks. Thank
all. Have a good night.
Good night.
All right.